This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Ted Genoways joins me. He is the editor, the award-winning editor of the award-winning America's Best Literary Magazine, the Virginia Quarterly Review. The spring 2009 issue is available now. This is out, right?
Yes, it is.
Okay. And we want to encourage everyone, of course, to run out and get a copy as quickly as possible. And we're going to talk about the new issue here during the first hour. We're also going to talk about the new awards that y'all have been nominated for. But before we do all of that, I understand that we have a couple of special people who are listening today. They're driving around in the car, and they're listening as we speak because you have a little boy who loves to hear his daddy on the radio.
Yeah, that's true. I revealed to you just before we came back here that that my son Jack loves listening to me on the radio, which is at least one person. That's great. So I always just remember that I'm trying to explain all of this to him.
Well, Jack, we're glad you're there, and thank you so much for spending some time with us. And let's get right to it. Tell us first, though, the new awards. I read about this, I guess, last week or the week before. The big news came out that yet again the VQR has made a list of nominations for some new awards.
That's right. Yeah, we were nominated for two National Magazine Awards this year. And I guess the thing that is pleasing most of all to me is that this makes the fifth year running that we've been nominated for General Excellence, which is sort of the big kahuna prize, and you know that category is for magazines with circulations of up to 100,000, and so that puts some fairly large magazines, some places like American Scholar and Print Magazine and Aperture, the photography magazine,
sure, yeah,
which are sort of perennial nominees, but now over the last 5 years we're becoming one of those perennial nominees also.
And absolutely.
So, that's pretty nice.
I was talking to a friend of mine who is out in L.A., and she's just finished a manuscript for her first novel, and I was talking to her recently about something I read in the VQR, and, well, I mentioned your name first, and she said, Ted Genoways, oh, the Virginia Quarterly Review.
Yeah,
she hasn't lived in Virginia for, like, 25, 30 years, but she knows the VQR, and she knows you, as do folks all around the world, with what you have done with this literary magazine, which is just fantastic. It really is great. And when will we know about the new awards?
At the end of April, the
so
awards.
So soon,
ceremony.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's coming up now.
Is there a ceremony? I mean, do you rent a tux? Is it this kind of thing?
Yeah, it's
look at your face. You're like, yeah.
It's an excruciating event each year. It's held at Jazz at Lincoln Center, so it's this sort of big blowout to do, and they have, celebrity presenters and all of that sort of thing. I have to admit the only time I've really felt sort of envious at one of these things was the year that Georgia Review won an essay, and the presenter that year, for reasons that are sort of hard for me to fathom, I'm blanking on her name now. The actress who played Princess Leia. She's just Princess
Carrie
Leia.
Fisher.
Carrie Fisher. That's exactly right.
Yeah,
she was the presenter. I'm not sure why.
She's a writer.
Well, I understand that she's, she's written,
some stuff.
I just, when I think of literary essays, I don't,
you don't think of Carrie Fisher.
I can't even come up with her name.
Yeah.
and yet, seeing one of my fellow university lit mag editors receive his award from Princess Leia was sort of envy inducing. But yeah,
you had to settle for some stuffed shirt nobody.
Yeah, I mean, it's usually, I don't know. It's always some dignitary from the Society of Magazine Editors whenever we win. It's never, well, I mean, like the weirdest thing a couple of years ago when we had a really sort of nice large group of nominations and all that sort of thing. There's something sort of weird about like bumping into, I think it was Meg Ryan and Kevin Bacon who were like, and it's like, what these people have to do with magazine editing, I have
no idea. What are they
doing
there?
But there you have it.
Meg, Kevin, how are you?
Exactly. Love that piece you did.
Yeah. My guest is Ted Genoways, the award-winning editor at the Virginia Quarterly Review. You can check it out online at vqronline.org. Let us talk now about the Spring Edition. It's just out. It's just available. The Spring 2009 edition of the VQR. And the first thing that jumps out at you is the cover itself.
Oh, that's great.
Tell me about the. I mean, it really jumped out at me when you handed it across the table. I was like, wow.
Well, good. That's because this was not the first cover of the issue. It was sort of a challenge. The cover features on is on the sort of the big melt-off, the which is now getting a lot of attention. Just the disappearance of glacial ice all over the world. And so it's a much more conceptual thing that we're trying to represent. And the challenge, of course, is that you go to these icy places trying to show that there's less ice than there should be, but they still look awfully icy. And so trying to find a cover that kind of captured what was going on was a challenge. We ultimately went with this great photo that Ted Conover took while he was in the Himalayas. And that story is the lead story in the issue and is kind of a remarkable example of exactly this sort of thing. The piece is set in the sort of lower Himalayas in Ladakh, in the region of Kashmir that butts up against China. And what Ted was going to do was to hike with this group of people from one of the rural villages as they hike a frozen river. And during the winter months, this river is the only way in and out of not just that village, but many of the mountain villages in that region. And the problem is that as the temperatures are rising, the river never fully freezes anymore. And so
once upon a time, it would freeze and be the main road up to all these villages.
Exactly. And so for months and months out of the year, it's too snowy for cars to traverse the roads, but it's not cold enough at this moment for the river ice to freeze up enough for it to be safe to walk the river.
Yeah.
And in recent years, as often as not, people who have been taking this ice road, as it's known, end up having to be airlifted out by helicopters at great expense rather than just being able to walk this traditional,
which they
path.
Did for generations, I guess.
Yes, absolutely.
And there's the picture on page 24 that sums up the whole thing.
Yeah.
Of this guy trying to walk up this, literally walk up a river.
Yeah, and as they get lower and lower in elevation, of course, the ice gets thinner and thinner until they get to certain places where there's just a very, very narrow shelf of ice that sort of rims the rock faces. And that's the thing that's sort of hard to grasp. It's not like once the river thaws that you've got these riverbanks that you can walk on, that it's often completely sheer rock faces. And so it's not navigable by boat. It's not something that you can walk unless it's frozen.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So in some of the spots, yes, that they've got some shelves of ice that are as narrow as a foot or less, that they're just still sort of walking along that edge and can still make it work sometimes.
And but you have essays here that look at, that take you to the Andes, Western Canada,
right.
Icebergs in the North Atlantic, Antarctica, and the whole point being that you may not see big changes here in Charlottesville, but there are places in the world where the ice is melting so rapidly and so quickly when that ice has been there for eons. And then all of a sudden, it truly is happening.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
And these essays and these pictures in the new edition of the VQR really tell that story.
That's exactly the idea that you know, we don't have a lot of glacial ice in our sort of daily lives, and so right. we don't think of it. But there are places where that is very much a part of their lives. And in fact, you mentioned the Andes. That story by Carolyn Corman, I think, is especially sort of haunting and moving because she's discussing a group of Quechua Indians in Peru who not only have traditionally relied on the melt water that comes off of the glacier, but have revered the glacier and regard it as a mountain god, and their religion holds that if the glacier ever disappears, that the world will end. And
great.
Yeah, that may be truer than one would have ever suspected.
Wow, my God. And also, you know, that's another thing. A lot of people think, well, the ice will melt, the water might rise a little bit, some people will lose their beach cottages. But but as you point out, there are whole cities in the world that depend on meltwater for their drinking water. You know, like in the American Northwest, I mean, you know, places like Seattle, they can exist because ice melts.
Right. Yeah, and that's the whole thing, is that the cycle is such that yes, there's always been melt and there's always been snowfall, but right now the melt is just outpacing the
snowfall
of the snow.
Yeah.
And what that means is that eventually you don't have that runoff, you don't have the water that you need, you don't have all of the wildlife that also depends on that water, and it does become an accelerating problem, as is being documented now.
Yeah. Now, we're familiar with the Extreme Ice Project, and this edition of the VQR is full of amazing stories. You've got an essay by Tipper Gore, Al Gore's wife.
Yes.
Who, of course, I would assume is as familiar with this whole story as he has been over the years. I'm curious what you learned, because we all sort of know, yeah, there's this thing called global warming, and we might have something to do with it, and glaciers are melting, but you know, it's sort of a cursory awareness. You've just spent the past few months buried with this information, talking to these people who went out in the world and lived it and saw it and wrote these amazing essays about their experiences. What did you learn?
Well, I guess the first thing that I learned is just how immediately it is affecting people's lives, that this is not something that is an abstraction for people in many parts of the world. It's not just the deglaciation that you see going on, but the desertification that's going on in other places as there are droughts, and there's actually going to be more about that in upcoming issues of EQR. This is something that's affecting many, many people right now. It's that we always think of global warming as something that we need to stave off before it begins to directly affect us. And
that's already happened.
It's happening right now.
In a very big way, yeah.
Absolutely so. And I guess the other thing, on sort of a small scale, I'm incredibly impressed at how durable and how resilient all of these various cultures have been in responding to these problems. And I find it actually slightly encouraging in thinking that, you know, if we can tackle these problems collectively, that there is a spirit of kind of innovation about all of this. And as sort of macabre and strange as it may seem, that one of the stories about a group of guys who used to be fishermen off the coast of Newfoundland who are now iceberg hunters. They go out and
wait a minute.
They go out and
iceberg hunters.
Yes, they blast the icebergs that are calving off of Greenland, net them in, and sell them mainly to a company that makes vodka out of them. And so
you got to be kidding me. That is really going on right now.
Yes, that's absolutely happening. And
guys who used to make their living on fish, the fish are gone.
Yeah.
And so now they're going to catch icebergs.
Yes.
And for vodka.
For vodka. And so when you see
iceberg, the human
vodka,
spirit,
it is in fact made with icebergs. That name is not just marketing. And so, I mean, there's something sort of hilarious and sort of there's a sort of aspect of gallows humor to it, because you think about the fact that, you know, these icebergs that they're blasting, you know, have been on land for thousands of years. And so there's something ominous about the fact
now we're getting drunk
that this
on
is happening.
Yeah. Yeah.
But there's also something sort of encouraging about these guys who, you know, when the seas became overfished and they couldn't make a living that way, they came up with something new with what they had at hand. And I really, I hope
you got to respect that.
That we'll be able to do the same thing on a global level, that we'll recognize the challenge that we're facing and we'll find a way out of it.
One of the best editors in the business today, Ted Genoways of the Virginia Quarterly Review. We're going to continue this conversation on the other side, exploring the new spring edition of the VQR. You can check it out online at vqronline.org. And one of the things that we're going to talk about before we get out of here, of course, is an unbelievable true story about a serial killer in Macedonia. And you have the complete story here in the new VQR. We're going to talk about that when we get back. A break for local news and weather. This is Charlottesville right now. We can work it out. We can work it out. Let's rejoin our conversation with Ted Genoways, the award-winning editor of the Virginia Quarterly Review, online at vqronline.org, and the new spring 2009 edition, much anticipated by its fans, is now available. And, you know, when I was leafing through it, when you first handed it to me, one of the things I was so excited about is that there is a new installment of Jordan Lent.
Yes.
So remind folks who Jordan Lent is and why Coy Barefoot might be so excited.
Well, Jordan Lent is the latest depressing creation of Chris Ware, who, in my opinion, is
he's a genius.
Yeah. That's really the only word there is for him. I think Chris is simultaneously one of our best graphic artists and one of our best fiction writers in the country right now. And it's our great fortune that he's able to put those things together so incredibly well. And Jordan Lent is his latest project, and it's yet another of his sort of narrative investigations. I mean, I see a lot of what Chris is doing as this sort of test of storytelling techniques. And in this case, it's taking a single day out of each year of Jordan Lent's life and illustrating just that one day. And so there's this sort of haunting march of years that happens as you read through the things that day may be a really pivotal turning point. It may just be a day in which some small decision that seems inconsequential sort of seems to push him further in a particular direction. But what's remarkable about each of them is how they are truly contained, and yet there is a world that's completely contained inside each of those single page explorations. And then as you line them up and as you follow him over the years, you see this person emerging who you come to care about, even though he does all sorts of really unattractive and unappealing
stupid things. Yes. he's oh so human.
Yes, exactly.
Jordan Lent. And of course, I would imagine this is destined to be a Chris Ware book one day.
Yeah, I'm sure. You know, Chris, who knows what exactly he has in mind for Jordan. A lot of times he publishes his work sort of as he's working on it in his own volumes that he self-publishes. And now this series and hopefully later series with us. And I think he's got them all plotted out and has in mind what they're going to be. But I can say that he's working on them and we're publishing them as he's completing them. And one of my sort of ongoing pleasures, Chris Ware is not only one of the most talented people I know, but he is easily the most self-deprecating person I know.
And well, you were telling me about these graphic novelists that you met.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Then the ones you know, that they're all sort of like that and amazed that people really enjoy their work. Like me, I'm a huge graphic novelist fan.
Yeah,
you know, some of them are horrible, but there's so many out there that will just blow your mind. You can't believe this is a quote unquote comic.
Yeah, well, but Chris, every time I get a new installment from him, as you know, it starts with me sort of pestering and saying, you know, the deadline's coming, and do you have something and he'll send the stuff along, and it's always this thing of saying, you know, look, if you've decided now that you just can't take this series anymore and you don't like this stuff and you finally come to your senses, I will understand. And at first I thought it was kind of a shtick, but it's not. I mean, that
he's
really
sincere,
is
yeah.
sort of deeply insecure about the quality of what he's doing, but it's absolutely genius, as
totally.
You said.
Yeah. And of course, folks who aren't familiar with him might want to check out Jimmy Corrigan. What, is Jimmy Corden the smartest kid on earth?
Yeah.
Which is just I couldn't put it down. I mean,
it's a great novel is what it is.
Yeah, and, And it's told like a comic book.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And really powerful. And a kind of comic book you have never seen.
Absolutely. And that's the thing that I love about what Chris is up to, is that it's not just about illustrating a story. The way that the story is drawn, the way that the panels move,
is part of the story.
Yeah. It that is part of the narrative technique, and I think he's really exploring the full potential of this intersection between words and pictures more than anybody else out there.
Absolutely. The Virginia Quarterly Review, the spring edition, is now available, and we are talking with its award-winning editor, Ted Genoese. It's about 15 minutes before the hour of 6 o'clock. Let's turn our attention now to one of the most riveting stories in the new edition, and that is a true story of a serial killer in Macedonia.
Yeah.
When did you first find out about this?
It started with an AP news item that I saw, and I talked with my managing editor, Kevin Morrissey, about it. He had actually seen it also. You know, it was one of those things that ran as a paragraph in the newspaper and got picked up sort of as one of those odd items of the day on places like CNN. But then it just vanished. And the simple description is that there was the serial killer in Macedonia, and that the police had been following.
Where is Macedonia, by the way?
Well,
I'm going to be a regular American and say, where the heck is that?
That's a good question. It's all part of the it's part of the Balkans. It's all part of that region that was broken up from the former Yugoslavia, and which is a critical point, because one of the things that the writer Dimitar Kenarov, who is himself Bulgarian, Dimitar's one of these sort of young geniuses himself, you know, and so Dimitar's always saying, you know, well, my Macedonian isn't perfect, but but I think I can go there and report this story. And so Dimitar, in telling the story, picked up on the fact, which I think is a vital fact, that Macedonia was largely untouched by all of the violence that came from the breakup of the former Yugoslavia. And that part of the reason that people were so shocked by this these savage killings was exactly that they hadn't become sort of deadened to this incredible savagery in the way that lots of other places in the region had. And so this became a kind of national obsession as
the hunt for this killer.
Yes, yeah. as this group of elderly women who all worked as essentially as janitors in public buildings, all in the same town in Macedonia, and then the story was being carried in the national newspaper, being written by one of the country's most lauded and well-known writers, and he himself seemed perfect for writing the story because he had essentially wanted to retire from writing about daily matters and writing about crime.
This was a well-known reporter.
Absolutely.
Who's covering this story.
Yeah, he'd won their National Journalism Prize two or three times and that sort of thing. But what he'd always really wanted to do was to write these sort of nostalgic pastoral pieces. And so it seemed this perfect thing for him to be able to write about these murders that were happening in the Macedonian countryside and that it was these elderly women. He was fond of interviewing the elderly about their memories of older times. And so it all of this sort of seemed to come together, and everyone was obsessed with the progress of this case when it took this sort of impossible and unimaginable turn, which is the thing that caught international attention, if only briefly, which is that the police arrested Vlado Tenesky, the writer himself.
The reporter who turned out to be the guy who was arrested.
To be the serial killer.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. And
hello, Hollywood.
Yes. Now, of course, Tanesky's family disputes his guilt, but it seems pretty unmistakable that, I mean, there's a mountain of evidence that points to Tanesky. But there's still this lingering doubt because Tanesky's first night in prison, he turned up the next morning dead in his cell.
What a story.
And the circumstances of his death are still disputed. The police say it was suicide. His family, of course, says that they think that there was foul play. And so there's sort of mysteries upon mysteries. And Demeter Kenneroff, our young writer, did a remarkable job of getting everyone involved in the case to talk to him and get just unprecedented access to everyone who had dealt with Tanesky and the families of the victims and so on. And it's just a remarkably told story.
And this is the story about the serial killer, yeah, and the supposed alleged murderer that they arrested and then,
absolutely,
turned up dead in prison,
yeah,
the next,
yeah,
day.
Yeah, there's nothing out there like this. I mean, this is, if you want to know about this story, this really is the source for it.
Yeah, amazing, amazing. And tell me again, he's a reporter covering the serial killer. So the old woman turns up dead, and then the reporter shows up the next day to interview the family.
Yeah, that's
turns out he was the killer.
Yeah, that's the thing that's really sort of the chilling aspect of it all, is that the families, as if it weren't bad enough to have a member of your family murdered, to realize in retrospect that the person who showed up at your house to write about your family,
sit at your kitchen table and talk to you about your grief and what happened,
poured your heart out to, that person was in fact the killer, sort of reveling in your suffering.
Gives you chills, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's an amazing and really grim story. I should point out too, I'd be remiss if I didn't, that Demeter Kenneroff is going to be coming in and reading from this piece and talking about this.
Oh, he's coming to Charlottesville.
Well, he'll be at Sweetbriar on April 23rd.
That's a short drive. Yeah.
Yeah. And so we're really delighted that he's coming in for the International Writer Series at Sweetbriar, and we'll be reading from this essay and discussing it.
The writer who wrote about the reporter.
Right. Yes, this is not the serial killer.
Yes, let's make that distinction.
This is Demeter Kenneroff himself.
Lest people
the
be confused.
Killer. Yes. There will be no killing.
How many people were actually in this string of murders?
Well, I think there are six that they know of, but there are some. I mean, there's dispute about which murders are actually attributable to him.
And they stopped after they arrested this guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Unbelievable. So have any producers contacted you yet for this?
not us, but we have, I mean, the issue just published yesterday officially. But it is interesting. We've already, the issue just went out. We've gotten requests from a Peruvian magazine and also from a Serbian magazine to translate and republish the piece.
Sure. Yeah.
And so, There has been sort of immediate, strong international interest in this story, and
it's an amazing story, unbelievable story. Gosh, yeah. Now Ted Genoway is, of course, the editor at the Virginia Quarterly Review. Preview for us, if you can. You're literally working now on the summer edition,
right,
which will come out in June, July, August.
Yeah, it'll come out in late June, be on stands by July 1st.
So preview for us, if you can, what that one is going to be about.
Well, we're calling it Promised Land, and it deals, at the front of the issue, the portfolio deals specifically with the literal Promised Land, the Levant in the Middle East, and looks at the whole sort of history of the conflict between the Israelis and Palestinians in the region. It's as current as the recent conflict in Gaza. We had a couple of reporters who we managed to get in while the area was still sealed and were there while the Israelis were still bombing. And then pieces that look at the deep history of the region. We've got a piece by Tom Bissell that is about him looking for the tree that is supposed to be the tree where Judas hanged himself. We have a piece that is by a British journalist, Peter Lagerquist, that looks at the ways in which the British really established the lines that are still enforced in the region, and the political reasons and the practical reasons that the British Army had for creating these concrete and barbed wire lines. So it really it's a deep look at the conflict in the region.
Amazing, gosh, and that's in the summer edition.
In the summer, yeah,
edition of the VQR, the Virginia Quarterly Review. It's online at VQR Online. Ted Genoways joins us on occasion to talk about the new editions when they're available, and the spring edition of the VQR is now available. Published just yesterday, you can pick it up at bookstores throughout Central Virginia.
Absolutely.
Can you buy it from the website? I can't remember.
You sure can. Yeah, it's vqronline.org.
There you go. So you can go there and order it as well.
Yes.
Good
definitely.
Deal. Ted, thanks for being here. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Coy.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit cvillepodcast.com for more.